Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When it comes to pensions, performance counts. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Now, legislation to regulate the gambling industry in Ireland enters its final stages in the Dáil tonight. Under the Gambling Regulation Bill, a new regulator will be established with powers of enforcement against the industry, along with curbs in advertising and related matters. Gambling companies that breach the law could face substantial fines of up to €20 million or 10% of their turnover. Well, to discuss all of this, we're joined now by Minister of State at the Department of Justice, James Brown. And Minister, you're welcome to the programme this evening. We might start with the gambling regulatory authority. When will that get up and running?
So once the legislation passes, we expect to get that running as quickly as possible. We already have the regulatory authority in an embryonic stage. We've appointed Emery Caulfield as the CEO designate, and she has been standing up that authority so that it is ready to go as quickly as possible once the legislation is passed. And that's what we're looking forward to with this legislation passing tonight, hopefully, in the Dáil. It is at the last stage. It's taken a considerable amount of work by myself and my colleagues. It's something we've been waiting for decades, to be honest. I mean, every 10-year-old is going around with a casino in their back pocket. We know that there's serious addiction issues, and the SRI report shows that about 1 in 30 people in this country has some type of gambling problem. And we need to address this from a public health perspective, but we also need to regulate this multi-billion euro industry and ensuring there's a fund in place as well, by way of a levy, so that we can fund what's known as a social impact fund and fund education fund research and treatment.
So talk to me about that levy, because Colin O'Gara was speaking to Una Kelly here on the programme a little while ago, and he was saying that you need to levy the industry properly in order to properly fund services. What will that levy be placed at?
So that would be a recommendation from the regulator once she has established the size of the industry, because this is part of the problem. We actually don't know how big this industry is. We estimate it's probably about 6 billion, but because the industry is almost completely unregulated, we don't really know. So once the licenses are being issued, we'll have a much better understanding of what that is. But absolutely, we want sufficient funds from the Social Impact Fund so that the necessary treatments can be provided as a result of the damage of the gambling industry, and also the industry itself will be paying for the regulator, so there won't be an impact on the taxpayer.
Okay. In terms of charities, then, we also heard a little earlier in the programme that a lot of charities are concerned about the regulatory burden on them, that they're going to be expected to carry out all the same paperwork and administration as multinational gambling companies.
No, there is allowances made for charities within the legislation in terms of that regulatory regime will not be as strict as for, say, the commercial sector. But nonetheless, the charity sector has been regulated in the gambling sphere since the previous legislation was brought in, and we intend that onus on them won't be too onerous. But we do have to regulate all the gambling activities in the country, and that includes for the charity sector. But as I say, with an understanding that that funding being raised by them is for good causes and that there won't be as much paperwork or regulation on them in that sense.
Talk to me about free bets then, because I know Senator Michael McDougall challenged you over what he described as a crazy decision by government to allow, under this legislation, to allow gambling companies to offer inducements and get people involved in gambling. I think you've somewhat changed the position since then, is that correct?
Yes, so what we have done is that I did look at the legislation after Senator McDougall raised a concern about there being a kind of a positive affirmation in it to allow companies to do that, and it wasn't necessary. I felt it was redundant when I looked at it. So we've deleted that out of it. We've also given powers to the regulator to look at any offers that are being made to see do they need more reservations put on them or to ban them if necessary. We're not completely banning all offers or promotions by the gambling industry, but what we are saying is they cannot target individual people. They cannot target individual groups of people. If it's an offer, it has to be available to everybody. And that kind of targeted inducements towards individuals to keep them gambling will come to an end.
Okay, so it's still the ban is still on targeted inducements, but that means there is still no ban on offering free bets. Is that correct?
Not if it's offered to the general public. No, there's no complete ban. It is an industry that is out there. We are advised by the Attorney General that they have to be entitled, like any industry, to be able to make offers. But those offers are going to be strictly regulated. They can't be targeted. And the regulator and the minister will have powers to tighten any offers that they feel are being inappropriate in that respect. But like any industry, they can make offers.
I know some people representing gambling addicts, and indeed gambling addicts themselves, have said that the free bets are one of those things that can help them fall back into addiction.
Well, a lot of the free bets for people who have gambling problems are targeted free bets. So when you have a gambling account and you stop gambling, suddenly you get better odds or you get free bets or whatever the case may be. Those kind of targeted inducements are prohibited under this legislation. But to go to the next step where you ban all promotions to the general public, we felt would cause serious difficulties for this legislation in the courts, because effectively you're preventing an industry from being able to promote itself, and that does get into the competition law sector as well. But there's a lot of other protections in here for anybody that might have a gambling addiction, as well as the social impact fund, but also protecting people being able, for example, the exclusion register, being able to get onto that, and the onus and the requirements on the industry not to be targeting particular groups of people, and including children as well, for that matter.
Will there be a limit to credit card spends?
Credit card spending is banned under this legislation. You won't be able to use any kind of credit to gamble.
Okay. Can you talk to me what role exactly the regulator is going to play under the legislation?
So the regulator will be regulating a massive industry. As I say, we estimate it's 6 billion, but we don't really know, unfortunately, until we start issuing the licences. But they will be coming from a public health perspective as well. So ensuring that this industry that's going to be regulated will be managed in a way that respects public health, respects vulnerable people, prevents children from getting involved in gambling. As I say, it's a massive industry. It's a very quick moving industry. So the way we've done the legislation is that there's a lot of strong rules in primary legislation, but these can be amended through statutory instruments by way of recommendations from the regulator to the Minister of the Day. So that we don't have to keep going back to the legislator to tighten up rules, because this industry is very fluid in how it attracts people and how it targets people. And we've seen, for example, a lot younger people and a lot more women getting involved in gambling in recent years as the business changes.
What about the likes of the cash machine, which takes place on Barrow Media? Will that continue?
Well, the cash machines won't be banned, but they will have to seek licences. I've been heavily lobbied in the last couple of stages within the Dáil and the Seanad to give exemptions for those types of prize money competitions, completely to step out of the legislation. I haven't allowed that. I haven't made any particular exemptions. So they will still have to apply for a licence. The advertisement rules that apply to every other gambling commercial sector will apply to them, and all other requirements around anti-money laundering, around child protection, will all apply to any of these cash prizes run on radio stations.
So the advertising aspect of this bill bans the broadcast of gambling advertising on TV and radio between the hours of 5:30 a.m. and 9 p.m. So just correct me if I'm wrong now, for example, with the cash machine on Barrow Media, they wouldn't be able to advertise that every hour between 5:30 and 9 p.m.
No, they won't be. They'd be able to say, yeah, no, they won't be able to run advertisements during those hours.
What would they be able to say, sorry?
The regulator will have to look at that to see exactly what can be said. So you can give factual information. So, for example, you can say that there is a competition on. But how far you can push that is going to be very much restricted by the regulator. But it will be very difficult not to breach the advertisement rules, to be honest.
Some people think that what you've done here goes too far, and you've mentioned lobbying a couple of times, and I know this has been, you've been hugely lobbied on lots of different, from lots of different perspectives in relation to this bill. Pat Lorden, who's a former chief superintendent at the Garda National Economic Crime Bureau, was speaking to The Independent, and he said that he thinks this poses money laundering risks and that this is going to send a lot of gambling into the black market underground.
Well, the legislation is very strict on anti-money laundering and terrorist financing rules and applying those rules that are currently existent both in this state and under European Union legislation. And the industry effectively has been operating outside of any real regulation in recent decades. So I think this will very much strengthen the powers by the regulator and by Garda Síochána to challenge anybody who might be involved in money laundering activities. And a lot of industries within the gambling sector that have not really had any cover whatsoever.
Yeah.
For example, members'
the guards,
clubs will be covered.
And Pat, the point that Pat is making, Pat Lorden in The Independent, is saying, and I'll give you the quote, it'll fall back to Johnny the guard down in Dingle to go out on his push bike and see if there's any gambling there in the shed of a house. You know, he's saying the guards don't have the resources to be checking in everywhere, because a lot of the time casinos or places where gambling is happening don't even have a sign over the door. The guards don't have the resources to go checking in everybody. So then, you know, the black market starts to gain some traction.
Well, I don't expect guards are going to be knocking on doors to see somebody's having an old poker game in their home. Like, that's not going to be regulated. And any guard of Shia Conan, no matter where they're based in the country, are now highly trained with policing degrees. So I think kind of commentary about, you know, Johnny the Guard, I think is actually quite disrespectful about the Guard of Shia Conan today. The Guard of Shia Conan will have a very important role here, as will the regulator, to ensure that the law is complied with. And I have full confidence in the regulator and on Garda Síochána Síochána to be able to do that and ensure that illegal gambling is not happening. There will always be an issue with illegal activity in any sector that's regulated.
Yeah,
but there's very powerful consequences in here for people who will face prison time, serious prison time, if they are in breach of this legislation.
Okay, and one of the things that that he was pointing to particularly, Pat Lorden, now I'm talking about, was the limit on 10 euro bets at tables, you know, for poker, blackjack, things like that, for card games. And Carlton Entertainment Group Chief Executive also raised this. She was saying, you know, that 10 euro limit makes sense for slot machines, you know, where you can make multiple bets in a minute. It makes sense to put a 10 euro limit on that. But for table games like roulette and poker, which take a long time, a 10 euro limit is surely going to make people look around and say, well, where could I get higher stakes?
Well, the 10 euro limit is the existing law. So I would question any organisation how are they complying with the law at the moment. We are only carrying over the existing limits that exist in the current law. And if they're complying with the law at the moment, they'll have no problem complying with the law when this legislation passes.
I want to ask you separately, Minister, about the hate speech legislation, because obviously it has been changed quite dramatically since it was first put forward. And I know Independent Senator Eileen Flynn has said that various minorities just can't wait for the measures that have now been delayed. They can't wait for those measures to be introduced, and they want those introduced immediately. I know Minister Helen McEntee said that she removed the provisions on hate speech and incitement to hatred because of a lack of sufficient agreement among political parties. But you have a majority in the Dáil. You didn't need agreement among political parties.
Well, I think there was significant disagreement on relation to that and from a lot of different angles in relation to it. So it wasn't a case of, you know, one side saying A and another side saying B. Across a broad political spectrum within the Dáil, there was a lot of disagreement. So there was. So Minister McEntee, I think, has listened to that and is... It's really important we get this.
But I mean, there's often, there is often, you know, a lot of disagreement in the Dáil, particularly on opposition benches, to things that the government is doing. But the government has a majority. So if there was will in the government parties to get this across the line, you could have.
Well, look, the votes are there within the government. There's no question about that.
Well, but were they, I suppose? I think there is a question about that. Cause that's the only conclusion you can draw here, is that the votes weren't there in the government parties.
No, look, I think for something as sensitive as this, you do try to build a consensus around it. There's not a consensus on the speech side of it. We do have to get this legislation passed, however. Our legislation is completely out of date and vulnerable minority groups are facing, I think, sometimes horrific abuse, and we need to see more people being charged and, quite frankly, in prison for the type of activities and hatred that some people are spewing out there. But in relation to the speech part, I think, look, it is going to be looked at again to see what else can be done in relation to it and try and build a stronger consensus around it.
Consensus within the government parties, that was the problem, wasn't it?
No, absolutely not. I think, you know, Minister McEntee...
Well, we know that there are some people in the government parties, they openly came out and said they had problems with it.
Well, look, Minister McEntee has listened to everybody and has decided that this needs more consideration, and Minister McEntee has made her decision on this.
Just in terms of the hate speech law that is going to go through, and I think perhaps go through the Shannon this evening, the other questions have been raised about what that actually does include. Senator Michael McDougall again repeatedly posing a question around the provision to extend the definition of gender to include the gender of a person or the gender which a person expresses as the person's preferred gender or with which the person identifies, and includes transgender and a gender other than those of male and female. And Michael McDougall has asked, what is meant by gender other than those of male and female? No response yet given from the Department of Justice.
Look, we know that transgender and non-binary people are facing an awful lot of hate and abuse out there, completely outrageously and completely wrong. And that's why this legislation is going to be passed and include those references to transgender. You don't have to define every word. Like, I practice as a barrister. Once you start defining words, then you have to define those words, and those words take on their own meaning. You end up going down all sorts of circles, so you do. Mm-hmm. The judges are well able to make up their own assessment of what words mean and give them their ordinary meaning. So I have no difficulty with this.
But I think it's fair to say that a lot of people wouldn't know what the ordinary meaning of a gender other than those of male and female is.
Well, it includes transgender and non-binary. So it does.
Okay, so is that the definition? And if so, why is that not included in the legislation?
Because then you're down to a handful of words. So we want to leave this open to the courts and the judges who have the power under our constitution to be able to make those assessments. So we do.
And we saw that, Minister, didn't we, in the referendums where a lot was being left open to the interpretation of the courts, and people had a real problem with that when they were given a chance to vote on it.
Well, the courts interpret words every single day of the week down in the forecourts. You know, you cannot, we do not have a Central Europe style legislative system where you set everything out in black and white and where you define everything. We have a common law system. We have judges under our constitution and we have to trust those judges to do their job.
This is not about defining everything, though, is it? This is a pretty core issue, the gender other than those of male and female. You know, this is not about defining everything. This is about a highly contested issue. And you're leaving it to the courts to decide.
Oh no, absolutely, and I have no difficulty with that. As somebody who practices as a barrister, I have no difficulty with that. I think it's common for our judges to interpret words and to leave interpretation to our judges to do that.
All right. I want to ask you finally then, Tánaiste Micheál Martin has opened the door to an early general election, according to the Irish Times. He's spoken to the Irish Times podcast and he said he didn't specify preference, but he indicated that a date in late November or early December could be possible if certain bills currently before the Oireachtas, including the finance bill, were accelerated. Does that mean it's game on, effectively?
Well, as somebody who grew up in politics, I'm always ready for an election because I grew up in an era where you had elections on an almost yearly or bi-yearly basis. Look, the election is coming one way or the other. If it's not coming this side of Christmas, it has to be held by the middle of March. And we're all getting ready for that election whenever it may come. But it's a matter for the leaders to make their decision. Personally, I want to see the government go its full term. And I think that's always the better option for any government that it sees as its full term.
Full term being February?
Election call in February for a date in March.
That would be your preference. OK. It's interesting to speak to you and thank you for joining us as Minister of State at the Department of Justice, James Brown.